This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is The Morning Run with Lynn and Shaoning. Now, in about 15 minutes, we're going to be bringing you the KLCI opening numbers as well as some of the latest corporate news. But in the meantime, we're taking a look at US and China relations. Because it was only in January that global markets were rallying on the back of phase one progress in the US-China trade war. But today, it seems that relationships between these two countries have reached new lows.
Oh yeah, they've found something new to fight over. Which is who caused the COVID-19 outbreak, right? So in the past week, President Donald Trump said that he believed that China's mistake was the cause of this global pandemic, while his Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said a significant amount of evidence, I want to see that evidence by the way, suggested that that the virus originated in a Wuhan lab. Now, of course, China has rejected those claims and also tried to point a finger at the US by alleging that the US military might have brought the virus to Wuhan. It's almost like a movie, honestly. So are we seeing this new Cold War between the US and China, as some observers say?
You say it's like a movie. I feel like it's a playground argument. But, you know, what can we do when these are two of the biggest economies in the world? So joining us on the line to discuss this is Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Aaron. So rhetoric from American senior leadership has been increasingly tough on China over its handling of the COVID-19 outbreak. Are the hawks in Trump's administration gaining ground over the moderates in determining the direction of the U.S.'s China policy?
There's no question. There's broad frustration in the United States over the initial cover-up in China that allowed the pandemic to spread so far and so wide. And the Trump administration's responding to that. But I think it really matters which hawks in the Trump administration have been empowered by this. Is it the hawks in the Defense Department who are primarily concerned about what the United States can do to support a liberal international order and very concerned about Chinese actions, say, in the South China Sea? Or is it the ethno-nationalist hawks like Stephen Miller in the White House, who's more focused on things like limiting American immigration? And if you're talking about the hawks in the Defense Department, you know, that's really a consensus view within American foreign policy. Whereas those more ethno-nationalist hawks, they don't have an analog on the Democratic side of politics in the United States. So clearly hawks have been empowered by this, but it really does matter which ones.
And, you know, we've seen the debate, of course, you know, a lot of commentary coming out from President Trump and his close allies about, who, you know, the cause of the virus. And some of them saying it comes from the high security lab in Wuhan. Does this actually fracture the relations between US and China even more? Because we do see the Chinese media actually kind of coming back with their own comments on this.
Yeah, not just the Chinese media. We actually saw the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokespeople in China speaking from the rostrum at the ministry, you know, pushing these conspiracy theories that the virus initially came from the United States. I think that's one of the reasons that countries like Australia have argued that there needs to be an international inquiry. And if everyone opens their doors and is transparent about, you know, what actions were taken early on in the crisis, when it was detected, in which countries, then we can have a much better shared understanding of where it started and when. But, you know, unfortunately, Beijing responded to that suggestion by Australia with threats of an economic sanctions against Australia. So, you know, based on that reaction, it doesn't seem like China is going to be very willing to be transparent about what happened in the early days of the crisis.
So are we likely to see any kind of concrete action by the U.S. government against China over the pandemic, or is this a case of all bark and no bite?
I think it's really hard to say at this point, and a lot of it really depends upon how Beijing reacts to these statements, not all of which, you know, have been terribly responsible or well considered by the White House or the State Department, and whether or not middle powers like Australia, Japan, the European Union, perhaps Malaysia, can step in and, you know, talk some sense to both sides and make a case for international cooperation in the midst of the pandemic, as opposed to, you know, this kind of confrontational rhetoric that we've seen so far.
So don't you think at this current moment, President Trump's efforts to antagonize China seem rather ill-timed, given that if anybody's recovering economically, it is China, and they may need China's help, I mean, in a way to get the global economy going again?
I think in the short term, that's true. But we have to remember that, The United States is still the largest economy in the world. It has an asymmetric trading relationship with China in that it imports a lot more Chinese goods than China imports from the United States. China is in the midst of attempting this transition to a domestic-based growth model. And regardless of when countries recover, we know that things like retail are going to recover much more slowly around the world. So it's going to be much more difficult for them to make that transition when the United States is already in a growth model that seems more sustainable, that's more based on services. So I'm not sure that, you know, in the short term, it does appear that China is opening up more quickly because it's gotten a handle on the virus more quickly. But I'm not sure in the medium term, just in a matter of a year or two, if that's going to be the case.
So how effective is attacking China going to be for Trump as an election strategy? Even if he is successful domestically as well with this, would this have an effect of alienating his administration on the international front?
It's not clear to me what strategy the White House and the Trump campaign is going to take in this election. The report suggests that there are still really fierce debates within his camp as to how hard to attack this. Some of them see this as a weakness, given the administration hasn't responded to the virus itself in a particularly coherent manner. And some of them see this as a strength and are going to seek to tie Joe Biden to China. And so until that debate's resolved, it's really difficult to know. But I would just say that on the Democratic side, you don't really have the kind of advocates for the bilateral relationship that you once had on both sides of politics, no longer on the Republican side, but no longer on the Democratic side either, because people who follow the relationship on both sides of politics have basically looked at the last 30 years and said, we gave China a real shot to become what Americans used to call a responsible stakeholder in the international system. And instead of seizing that opportunity, Beijing took advantage of the world's openness. And so there's not a real constituency on either side of politics for a return to the way that things were.
And Aaron, let's look at things from a China perspective. What do you think their foreign policy strategy is going to be with regards to their relationship with US?
I think what their strategy is with the US is to some extent a strategy of what its relationship is with the region. And we've seen with the Chinese Coast Guard harassment of the West Capella drill ship off the coast of Sarawak that the strategy hasn't changed very much. There's been no pause because of the pandemic in the harassment of littoral states around the South China Sea, in the use of economic relations to try to coerce Southeast Asian countries into doing certain things. And that is actually one of the things that has really provoked the United States' more hawkish reaction to Chinese policy in recent years. And so long as that continues, I think that we'll continue to see American policy seek to try and reinforce the region's ability to stand up for itself. And so, again, a lot of this depends upon how Beijing responds in the midst of the pandemic. And I don't think that's changed very much.
But Beijing has also been very careful, right, to never attack President Trump directly.
Yeah, I think they know that this is a president who values pomp and circumstance. A former colleague of mine, James Green, recently gave an interview in which he said that it used to be in the U.S.-China relationship that the Americans were always offering things like state dinners and White House welcoming ceremonies and really giving the Chinese president a lot of face. And in return, the United States would receive a number of very substantial concessions on policy in exchange for that ceremony. And it's almost as though the roles have been reversed. And so if you looked at the phase one trade deal signing ceremony in the White House earlier this year, you know, the Chinese sent a relatively junior official, Lu He, and he was in the Oval Office signing this with President Trump. It wasn't a very strong trade deal, but President Trump was able to have that Oval Office signing ceremony and get the political benefits from that ceremony. And the Chinese were able to pocket a number of American concessions on that trade deal. So it's almost as though the sort of the values and the roles in the relationship have been reversed under the Trump administration.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Aaron. That was Aaron Connolly, research fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies, giving us some insight into some developments in the US-China relations. And It is some very interesting to me how China has steered clear of leveling any direct criticism at Donald Trump. I think the closest they've come is to say, certain U.S. politicians have made statements. But they came out, I think, to rebut Mike Pompeo's statements with quite strong language in comparison, calling him, I believe it was evil and a liar.
Well, there was a newscaster from the China's Central Television. They read a commentary accusing him of spitting poison, and that was directed at a top U.S. top diplomat. So the point is, okay, you know, there's lots of this, I would say, verbal assault on each other, and you know, it's directed at the officials, but never at Trump and never at Xi Jinping directly. So in a way, it's that get out of jail card, right? Because if you go there and you attack the president of each country, then you're going into territory where you can't retreat from. Mm-hmm. But the question is, in the midst of all this, right, in the midst of a global recession, when your unemployment figures in the US are, what, 15%, 30 million US people have applied for unemployment benefits, you are trying to start another, the trade war phase two?
It's misdirection, as far as I'm concerned. Because, you know, it is also for 6 months until Donald Trump has to face the polls. So he came out very, very early on to say that, this coronavirus is a hoax. It's not going to happen. Lo and behold, the US has the highest number of cases in the world. So rather than perhaps admit that he was wrong, is it easier to place the blame on China with malicious intent? Growing it in a laboratory?
Perhaps, I guess, then you can say, look, it's not my fault that you have no jobs. It's China, because they manufactured this so-called virus in a lab, right? That's maybe his rationale for it. As usual, when all else fails, distract.
So lots of interesting developments on that front that we'll be keeping an eye out for. But right now we have the 9 o'clock news bulletin for you. And then up next, we're taking a look at the KLCI opening numbers as well as some corporate news. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.